Today we welcome pianist and composer Miguel del Águila for a classical conversation on the album Torrential Rain Dance. Miguel's a three-time Grammy-nominated composer with features on dozens of albums. Torrential Rain Dance serves as his debut release with flutist April Clayton. I want to thank you, Miguel, for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So obviously you have this artistic compatibility with April to the extent that you recorded the whole album together. Can you take us back to when the two of you crossed paths and what it was that initially clicked?
A few years ago, April contacted me to commission me a trio for flute, viola, and harp. And I love the idea. So I wrote it and they have been performing this trio, and it's actually became one of my most performed pieces. I realized she's an amazing flutist. And on top of that, she has played a lot of timber music and contemporary music. That's when we talked about the idea, maybe in the future, we're going to do concerts together or do more music together. And so that's where it all started. Get along very well. We put together concerts without ever rehearsing. So that means there is a compatibility there. She's such a good musician that whatever I do, she does it with me when we are playing. And I'm not one of these musicians who have a prose and interpretation. Depending on the day, I play the music different. But we always know what the other is doing.
Let's take a look at some of the album highlights, maybe starting with the title track, Torrential Rain Dance, if you could tell me about your concept behind the piece.
Torrential Rain Dance, it's one of my the pieces I wrote during the pandemic. I think right before that, there was a drought in California, in the actual Southwest, and there was no water. You know, in my imagination, I needed to make water somewhere. So I used sort of the concept of a chant, as in many cultures, you know, have ritual chants that produce water magically or whatever you believe in. So I loved that idea. And then I thought, I'm going to bring this to the flute and the piano. It's a very different from many of my pieces. There is very little Latin. And well, no, there is, but there is more sort of Andean, more different, not so much other parts of Latin America. But so the piece is really a chant that starts very soft, very subdued, and it grows and grows. It never develops. It doesn't follow the development of a normal piece of music. It just repeats and repeats until it starts raining, and then it doesn't stop. So it ends with, you know, the chant having produced one.
Alongside Torrential Rain Dance, you've included a couple of other works, other dance-inspired works. Could you say more about the opening piano rolls flute?
Piano rolls flute is another crazy piece. You know, when I write music, I don't care much about the notes. I need to have a program. I need to have a purpose. So usually it's a story. That purpose is what gives the structure to the music. So piano rolls is a flutist is playing along with a player piano, a pianola. He's playing these old piano rolls, and the flutist is playing with it. Now the player piano is tired of playing the same old piano rolls. So it keeps interrupting and it keeps playing what it wants to play. And the poor flutist tries to follow along. And finally, the piano wins and it becomes this crazy Caribbean dance that the piano decides to play. So the sense is the tension between the piano and the flutist, really. The interruptions that each one makes are part of the music. So everything is written down, but you sense in the music this tension from two people on stage trying to go different directions, which I like very much.
It's like a little bit of a tug of war, would you say?
Well, frustration a little, but in a kind of friendly way. You know, if you do a lot of chamber music or play in an orchestra, there is always this tension that musicians have their own interpretation and they want to take the piece their way and somebody else wants their way. And God forbid there is a conductor there that wants everybody to go his way or her way. It's something that's very familiar to performers, the tension between imposing your interpretation or accepting more of somebody else. And usually a good performance is based on everybody compromising a little for the sake of the piece, which doesn't always work. So there's nothing that's not familiar. But in this case, it's taken to the extreme because it's part of the composition that you're playing this very nice tune. The tune gets very expressive, and all of a sudden the piano with a chord starts to play something totally different. But the challenge composition-wise was that it works as a piece. Its structure of this chaos works as a piece. And I think it does because people follow it.
How would you say that compares to your vision of the Malambo?
Malambo is, it was actually original, it was originally commissioned by 12 bassoonists for bassoon and piano and parallel bassoon and string quartet. Malambo is a dance that the gauchos dance in Argentina. It's like tap dance, but for gauchos. So it's purely rhythm. My Malambo doesn't have much to do with the actual structures of the original traditional Malambo, which had many restrictions harmonically and so. So it's my free interpretation of it. But what I use of it from it most is the rhythm. So it's a piece driven by rhythm. It's most of it in 13 16th, like it's one of my favorite time signatures. You know, the idea is there is this person in the Pampas in Argentina, right? And there is a celebration, and then this person is far away thinking of all his thoughts and some not very happy thoughts. And this person is thinking of joining that celebration or not. And finally, the person joins the celebration, then the rhythmic part begins. And then in the middle of these, the person isolates again. So there is sort of a slow movement. And then it returns again. It is very much this, when we are, you've been in a party or in a social place very often where you're not very, you feel a little insecure, or you're just, you got too many thoughts in your head. And you are there, but you're not there. And people are talking and talking, and you have your own head, your own problem, or your own thoughts. There could be good thoughts, right? And it's about that, what we feel when we are in a big group or in a celebration in this case, while we are isolated with our thoughts. And in our head, there is something that's almost as real as what's actually physically happening. So there is again that tension between two scenarios or two presence, the presence of two things in one piece.
Thinking about the rhythmic drive that you mentioned, that I guess made me curious, speaking more generally about your creative process, when you are envisioning a new piece of music, is there a musical quality that tends to speak to you the most? Are you thinking about color and then like melody and rhythm follow, or does the melody really drive a lot of the pieces? What's that process like for you?
Writing music is a very subconscious process for me. I do my planning. I set out to do something. Usually the thinking of the concept of the music is what takes me the longest. Usually when I start composing, I see myself like I'm inside a dark room with nothing in it. And slowly as I start composing, it starts being populated with things, with pieces of music. And then slowly it takes shape until the whole music is there. But I really see music visually. I see a whole piece, like a room that I'm inside of. So as you can imagine, it is not a linear process. It goes in many directions. Once you create out of nothing these themes or these ideas, they are living things. So they take a life of their own. And as much as you would like to control them, you don't. They really want to go in that direction. So you plan your piece to go left and the themes want to go right. You have to stay flexible, because if they want to go right, there is a reason. The themes know themselves better than you do. I'm sorry, this sounds totally crazy, but it is part of how I write music. I create these things and then they start taking over. I trust my subconscious when it comes to what to do next. And I think that's how you get the best ideas.
Well, let's not leave any tracks out of the mix. You have a pensive feeling to the Sonata Flautissima and the piece Silenzio. What was on your mind then?
Silenzio, which appears in different versions as Silence, it's a piece that's very dear to me. I wrote it when my younger brother passed away suddenly. I just wanted to pour my feelings into the music, and I wrote this piece. It doesn't have much of a form. It's rhapsodic in many ways. Yeah, it's just silence. The title tells you it's the silence you feel when you don't hear the voice of somebody you love anymore. You want to make a phone call and you realize, oops, they're not there anymore. That's silence. And I think probably because we musicians experience everything as variations of sound, so losing somebody we experience as silence mainly.
The Sonata Flautissima, I understand there are some interesting flute techniques that you incorporate into the piece.
Piano rolls and Sonata Flautissima were commissioned by April Clayton, who performs the album. And it's a piece for solo flute, no accompaniment, which is quite a challenge to write a long piece. It's three movements. That's the name Sonata, the three-movement piece. It begins very lyrical with the flute singing, in a sort of quiet landscape at night. The second movement is called beatboxing, which is a technique that's done in other kinds of music, but not so often in flute playing. There are so many, if you combine keying in the flute with singing and speaking into the flute, you get these amazing rhythms and colors that are not what you would associate with flute. So the second movement is beatboxing, and flutists are usually obsessed when they see that, because when you look at it, it's full of words, but also notes at the same time on the flute. And it's a technique that flutists traditionally don't learn in school, so they really use it as an exercise to learn the technique. And the final is a very humorous Latin dance that goes crazy. It's a little difficult, especially if you're the solo flutist, because there is no time to breathe. I wanted to make it a little shorter. Most flutists don't let me. They said, no, we like the challenge, so leave it as it is. If it were up to me, I would shorten it a little.
When was the official release of the album?
It released 3-4 months ago.
Gotcha. Have you had any listener feedback at this point?
A lot. And we're happy. You know, we got some amazing reviews from all kinds of places, from the flute community, flute journal. And so it's been so well received. It's getting a lot of airtime. So it started pretty well, and it's now pre-nominated for the Grammys, pre-nominated. We're crossing our fingers that it will move on to happy life.
We'll be crossing our fingers with you. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about it?
Just get the CD. It's on all the streaming platforms. If you're a flutist, most of those works are self-published. Silence is pure music. It's part of a piece called Miami Flute Suite. So everything is available. Yeah, listen to it. It's a fun, you know, flute, it's a fun instrument. So the whole album is very full of color and rhythm. And so if it's a great day, it's a good album to listen to.
That new album on the street is Torrential Rain Dance, with original works by Miguel del Aguila and recorded by Miguel himself with flutist April Clayton. Thank you again, Miguel, for the conversation. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.